Our first guest, and I think you're really going to like her. She is one of the really great pros in Washington, D.C. She happens to be one of my longest held friendships in D.C. also. Her name's Pam Pryor. Pam Pryor worked in the Trump administration in the State Department. She was acting assistant secretary. Pam, what were you acting assistant secretary of?
Well, it's called International Organizations. And Rick, you've known me, as you said, oh my gosh, north of 30 years. And for me to be in charge of the United Nations and World Health Organization shows that God truly does have a sense of irony and humor.
Yeah, he does. It's a... But, you know, I can't think of anybody who would be better to be doing that, given how you've progressed in terms of having relationships with virtually every faith-based group in America, and indeed many around the world. And as a result of those relationships, it became you were the natural person to be in relationship with NGOs and others, national non-government organizations and others. And as a result, I really think God really placed you where you needed to be. You know, the reason I wanted to have you on, Pam, is pretty simple. You know, the world's in turmoil right now. And, you know, we've got some terrible things happening around the world, particularly persecuting Christians. And I'd like to be able to focus a little bit on Afghanistan right off the bat, since that's on most people's minds.
Sure.
What are you hearing? What do you know is going on in Afghanistan? Is anything being done to try to help the persecuted Christians there?
Oh, Rick, that's
a good question.
I was going to say, how long do we have? Let's go back just a little bit. Persecuted Christians right now in Afghanistan are a bit of an island. You know, the country has been closed off. The army, the military, the Air Force, Marines, everybody at the behest of the commander-in-chief got on an airplane Tuesday night and kind of threw the keys to everything else out the window on their way out. So what's left in country is going to be a real challenge. I have heard there are many Afghani Christians who have chosen to stay and continue the faith and continue to minister to those in country. You know, God help them, because they are sitting prey, P-R-E-Y, right now for the Taliban and ISIS-K and the other groups. But it will be difficult, Rick, at least for the next few weeks to months until we sort this out. Will Afghanistan be a real country? Will it have a functioning government? Will they be at the table at the UN in the Security Council? Will they be able to actually interact with other governments? Until then, I think we as believers need to really lift up our fellow believers in Afghanistan, because I think they're on their own. Well, they're not on their own. They're with the Lord, but you know what I mean? As far as outside help, it's going to be very difficult.
Yeah, it's somewhat shocking that we chose to leave the field with so much unfinished business, with so many loose ends, and leaving not only our Afghan allies who were, you know, fighting with us, who were providing interpreter services, who really were, their fate was tied to the fate of the United States. Leaving them behind, but also the, you know, a burgeoning Christian community in an environment where the Taliban, you know, aggressively is, from what I've been told, is saying, we know where you live, we know who you are, and are just marking time before the real deep persecution begins. And you know, if Taliban turns out to be who we think and know they are, we're not talking about, you know, gee, we're going to throw you off of Twitter. We're talking about shutting down all external communications, all cell phone, all external communications, so you can't even cry for help. beyond prayer to God, which is obviously the most important thing, but, and then effectively destroying, you know, killing people. And it's a terrible thing to do. We saw what happened with ISIS in during the Obama administration and their attack on Christians and wiping out much of the Christian community in Iraq. Is that a similar fate? I mean, is that what we should be concerned about? Is that the Christian community in Afghanistan will be wiped out? Is there, I mean, what can we do? Is there anything we can do? Because it's, it well, seems like it's pretty desperate.
Yeah, I was going to say, Ambassador, now, you know, the problem with all of us that served in the Trump administration, we all have one title, former. So, right. Former Ambassador Sam Brownback said just recently, I've been on calls with him. We have a bit of a rump group, if you will, and these have sprung up all over. These are people, what they're calling the digital Dunkirk, to try to get people out. But Sam said, when we left, we created, in effect, another potential genocide, like we saw in northern Iraq with Christians and minorities in Afghanistan. It's what the Taliban does. They don't change their stripes. Well, it's one of the first things, you don't negotiate with terrorists. Trump was able to do that because, much like Reagan, he carried a big stick. He wasn't afraid to use it. He was not about appeasement. He was about America first, which is why he said, even, we need to be drawing down in Afghanistan. But, Rick, we stopped that drawdown in May of 2020 because the Taliban was no longer acting in good faith. And, again, with COVID and everything, and then the ensuing election change. But you, when you're dealing with terrorists, you have to be able to say, guys, you know, the only way to bully a bully is to bully them even more. And so I, except for the grace of God, I don't hold out a lot of hope for what our government, our current arrangement of government can do to help in Afghanistan. And like you just said, I just pray we will not have another genocide like we did of Christians and Yazidis in northern Iraq. But it sure portends to look that way. Now, the good news is Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, some of the border countries right now have actually been fairly generous with the U.S. in receiving refugees. And so maybe, you know, the neighborhoods over there are just, man, they're tough neighborhoods. I mean, when you've got Iran and folks like that on your borders, you know, it's not exactly the best place to be. But Lord willing, as I said, his arm's never too short. He might be able to pull off a miracle. I mean, I would love to see Rick somehow God glorified through this. I mean, he wants his glory. He deserves his glory. And wouldn't it be just like him somehow to do something miraculous? And I think that's, as believers, something we need to pray for.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It is a, you know, sometimes, you know, what we've seen throughout the world is the places with the most persecution have the most growth in the Christian faith. China has a Christian church that's larger than the United States, if you are honest about the size of the U.S. Christian church. You know, Iran, the mullahs in Iran's biggest problem is the young people are turning to Christ and rejecting them. So there is a, so we have a, God uses what they intend for evil for good. It's just really hard to watch in real time. You have a unique, had a unique experience and an experience that perhaps you can share with some people. I know you weren't doing this kind of stuff directly, but you were sitting in the State Department. And in a State Department that, if there is a swamp by definition, it's at Foggy Bottom. Tell me a little bit about trying to work and live and survive and get things done in the State Department, even in the Trump administration. How was that? How did that work? And what did you find there? Was it really bad, or were people really pulling oars together?
You know, Rick, you served in the Department of Labor at one time, and I know that you are going to agree with this statement. There are great career people. There are great government workers. And so I'm always careful to not throw babies out with bathwaters, you know, and say, oh, they're all bad. They're all awful. The State Department does, though, have the reputation of being one of the darkest, most globalist agencies within government. And, you know, Rick, it's like a pervasive thing. It's like just a residue. And I know with Secretary Pompeo and his counselor, Ulrich Breckbull, we would talk, there was just like an inertia against good in that building. And if it could be taken out by saying, well, let's just remove Susie Q or Billy Bob and then it's gone, we would have been able to do that. But there is just, it's just such a monster. It is a sprawling bureaucracy made up of several different workforces. We have career people, we have appointees, we have foreign service officers, we have locally employed folks. So it's like three or four or five different workforces. So it just starts out being dysfunctional anyway. And then you add the different way that people see the world right now. I mean, as you started out this half hour, Rick, it is not, let me try saying it in a positive way, a positive negative way. This is a time of such division. I mean, when we see the world differently, whether it's on vaccines or masks or pullouts from Afghanistan or, transgender designation for children under the age of 12, it's like a light versus dark thing. And the State Department seems to have a lot of dark in it. There's so many theological things we could discuss as to why that is true. But let me just go back to your original question. I really believe in the biblical imperative of being kind like a dove and smart like a serpent. And I would hope, and I think, Rick, you know I'm pretty winsome anyway, but I really try to love on those folks. I think there is such darkness there. And it is such a noble cause to represent the United States of America throughout the world that you just hope that people can catch that vision. But if they don't love the United States, then they're not out there sharing that sort of vision.
We're going to be right back in just a few minutes with Pam Pryor to talk a little bit more about her experience at the State Department.
Now is a critical time to be vigilant in the defense of our freedom. There's no better way to do so than by joining the Association of Mature American Citizens, AMAC. AMAC is one of the fastest growing conservative organizations in America. Well over 2 million people have joined and now carry the AMAC membership card. AMAC was built by regular folks who feel the same way you do. You're not alone. AMAC believes in and stands up for the values that made America so great. We're fighting the good fight against reckless government spending and the ever-expanding scope of federal government. We believe in the sanctity of our Constitution. So if you're 50 or over and hold to traditional American values, you no longer have to feel alone. Call the Association for Mature American Citizens, AMAC, and get great discounts and support your values. Call today, 855-696-7930, 855-696-7930. Use the code Pastor Greg, get your first year absolutely free. Are you getting up in the morning feeling like you and your bed had a bad night, still tired? Stop! It doesn't have to be that way. That's why Mike Lindell started MyPillow, and after his success helping people sleep better with the pillow, Mike decided to go all in. He found Giza cotton for the best sheets and created the ultimate mattress topper, and since stores won't carry his product, he's passing that savings on to you. Use the code PASTORGREG for incredible discounts and help feed starving children. Call today. 800-662-9236. 800-662-9236. Nowhere else are you going to be able to sleep well and know that you have fed starving kids. Use the code Pastor Greg. Call MyPillow today. 800-662-9236. 800-662-9236.
For the best night's sleep in the whole wide world, visit MyPillow.com.
Now, back to Chosen Generation with your host, Pastor Greg.
Pastor Greg.
And don't forget, you can get more Chosen Generation at www.chosengenerationradio.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. This is Rick Manning, President of Americans for Limited Government. I am sitting in for Pastor Greg today. And, you know, he will be back very shortly, but he's just taking a little respite. So lift him in your prayers. He's doing really great. But, you know, I know he always appreciates your prayers for what's going on, for his health, and for particularly the India ministry that he is just doing such incredible work with. We have a visitor guest today, Pam Pryor. Pam was an assistant secretary, acting assistant secretary at the State Department. And, you know, it is the definition of the swamp at the State Department. And so I really, with the few minutes we have remaining, I wanted to ask you, Pam, if given your experience, what would you tell an incoming Republican president in 2025 on how they should deal with the State Department?
Oh, that's such a great question, Rick. And I hope that he's a familiar person. Well, two things. One, staff early and staff well. Our biggest problem in the last administration is we had some good people, but they didn't get there. Bob Destro, dear, dear, dear friend, a Catholic university professor heading democracy, human rights, and labor. He sat in confirmation hearings and just in no man's land for 18 months. Sam Brownback, 11 months as ambassador for religious freedom. So I would say you need a strong Senate. You need people in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee who are going to get your nominees through. And then you need to staff up those GS 15, 13, 12s. You need to staff up with great people. Part of the problem, Rick, is I was in a bureau all by myself. I had no other political for a long time. And then I got a sweet young girl, Catherine O'Neill, that came in and helped me. But overall, you've got to have a buddy. I mean, it's just like, you know, in the Marines, they always say, make sure you know where your buddy is and you never leave your buddy on the field. But you've got to have somebody else to share with. So my advice would be staff early, staff well, and get somebody, again, like Mike Pompeo, who's got a military background and is not afraid to be strong, will not allow China to lecture them for 30 minutes, as our current Secretary of State did. And also, for my case, somebody that's got a faith, because you are going to need that faith and you're going to need to be on your knees as you are representing the U.S. throughout the world.
That's such a great answer. And, you know, Reagan said personnel is policy, and he was right. But when in a place where, you know, the bureaucracy, the kind of the regular grind of the bureaucracy is overwhelming in terms of personnel, it's resistant to change in terms of policy. And really would prefer that you not be there at all and will leak to the press anything that goes wrong that they don't like, trying to submarine you. It is an environment that you darn well better be covered in prayer. And so that's one of the things that I think people on the outside can do is pray for elected officials, pray for those who are Christians within the government to be able to live their faith both in life but also at work. Because there are Christians on both sides of the aisle. And we have to always remember that. And so let's lift them up. And that may be a call to action here that people can do at this difficult time. State Department's in deep trouble. And it's and we need to make lifting them up. You know, we are coming to the end of our hour. And I just wanted to say thank you, Pam. We will be back with Ken Blackwell. Talk a little bit about HR4 and election reform. This is Chosen Generation Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.